from WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? Happy, happy Tuesday. It is your favorite time of the day. Yes, 1 o'clock is hit, and Current Sports is pumping through your speakers. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. Folks, we've got a stacked show like we always do here today. Some breaking news concerning the MSU women's basketball team as one player decides to say bye-bye and bid adieu. We'll let you know who that is in just a sec. We'll also talk about the Ohio State win over the Oregon Ducks. Ohio State becoming the first winner of the inaugural college football playoff. How about that? We'll also discuss MSU finishing the year with a pretty high ranking. We'll invite Brian Callaway of the Lansing State Journal to talk high school sports and also the MSU women's basketball team. All of that and so much more. But as always, let's start the show like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this January 13th. All right, folks, we just got this news about 5 minutes ago. Michigan State University women's basketball player Jasmine Lumpkin has elected to leave the program effective immediately, citing personal reasons. Now, Susie Merchant just announced this. Now, Lumpkin is a freshman guard and forward from Bolingbrook, Illinois. She has played in 15 games this year, starting 14 times, averaged 5.5 points and 4.2 rebounds per game. Merchant said, quote, "We appreciate Jasmine's contributions and we wish her well in her future endeavors." Coach Merchant will have no further comment on this matter. All right, so we'll dissect that and so much more, folks. Again, that is breaking news. Jasmine Lumpkin leaving the Michigan State women's basketball program. All right, how about the Ohio State Buckeyes, folks? They were able to pull out a convincing victory yesterday at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas, over the Oregon Ducks, 42-20 the final, becoming the first ever college football playoff national champs. OSU head coach Urban Meyer now has three titles, adding this one for his home state team and the two he won for Florida. He matches Alabama's Nick Saban as the only coach to win national championships at two schools. It has taken just three seasons for Meyer to put the Buckeyes and the Big Ten back on top with a team that looks built to last. All right, Michigan State football is ranked in the top 10 of the final Associated Press rankings for the second year in a row. For the first time since the Duffy-Daughtry legend dairy teams of 1965 and 66, MSU jumped two spots from number 7 to a tie with Florida State at number 5 on the strength of a Cotton Bowl victory over Baylor and 11-2 finish. All right, Michigan State senior guard Travis Trice was named Big Ten Player of the Week by the conference office on Monday. In a pair of Spartan victories, he averaged 21.5 points, 7 assists, 2 steals, 2 rebounds on the road at Iowa and at home against Northwestern. Two gritty games as well. Now, on the season, Trice leads the Big Ten in overall assist-to-turnover ratio and assist per game. Former Michigan assistant Greg Madison is still a Michigan assistant coach, though he's no longer the defensive coordinator, ceding that title to DJ Durkin under the new coach Jim Harbaugh. He is returning as the defensive line coach, U of M announced. Now, Madison's second Division I assistant job was as the defensive line coach, then defensive coordinator at Western Michigan from 1982 to 86 under, get this, Harbaugh's father, Jack. All right, Al Slammer is stepping down as Holt's football coach. The veteran high school football coach announced Monday his decision to retire from coaching and teaching. Now, Slammer said his health and an opportunity to join the Albion College football staff factored into his decision. Slammer, who has had heart issues, spent 37 years working in high school football. All right, overcoming an early 14-point deficit, the Detroit Pistons got 34 points from surging point guard Brandon Jennings and timely passes from Jonas Jerebko and Jody Meeks to pull out a 114-111 victory over the Toronto Raptors on Monday night. Now, it was also their sixth straight road victory, their longest such streak since March of 2007. Greg Monroe poured in 22 and 10 rebounds. Andre Drummond had 10 points and 14 rebounds. All right, coming off a 1-3 3 loss to the Washington Capitals on Saturday. The Detroit Red Wings hope to get back to its winning ways tonight when they take on the Buffalo Sabres on the road. Now, injuries to Detroit's top two goalies now have put Petr Mrazek in the starting role with 25-year-old Tom McCollum and his backup while Jimmy Howard is out. Now, Howard was injured in the Red Wings 3-1 loss at the Washington Capitals on Saturday. An MRI done Sunday shown a slight groin tear. Now, puck drop is 7 p.m. tonight. The Denver Broncos and their former head coach John Fox, he was fired yesterday. The Denver Broncos and John Fox has mutually agreed to part ways. The move comes a day after the Broncos were eliminated from the playoffs by the Indianapolis Colts. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. All right. Well, again, folks, if you didn't tune in at the very start, 6 minutes ago on the show, again, breaking news coming from the MSU women's basketball program. Again, Michigan State University's women's basketball player Jasmine Lumpkin has elected to leave the program effective immediately, citing personal reasons. Susie goes on record to say here, this is a direct quote from the email all of us members around this area received. She said, quote, "We appreciate Jasmine's contributions and we wish her well in her future endeavors." Again, breaking news, Jasmine Lumpkin electing to leave the program effective immediately. Well, folks, we've got a hot show for you today. Later on, during our second segment of the show, I will invite my outstanding guest for today. He's a great friend of Current Sports and doing one outstanding job, as always, with the Lansing State Journal. He is the Lansing State Journal now lead prep sports reporter and also, of course, covers the MSU women's basketball team and so much more. Brian, of course, will be weighing in on this breaking news. He'll also talk about the struggles of the women's basketball team this season. Again, 0-5 in the Big Ten. Susie and company still searching for that first Big Ten conference win. So Brian will break all of that down as well as give us a preview of all of the high school basketball game action that is taking place tonight and also the breaking news concerning Holt, now former Holt football coach, Al Slammer, deciding to retire and try his talents at the high school, the college ranks. So Brian will have all of that and so much more. We'll also have a Top 5 Tuesday for you as I break down the top 5 moments of this college football season. And we'll briefly discuss the Pistons and Raptors because the Pistons are certainly on a roll. They have now won 6 straight on the road. How about that? The red, white, and royal blue are certainly rolling right now. Again, folks, we will be taking your calls as well all the way up until 2 p.m., just like we do every day here on the show. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's start the show, actually, with a caller. We have Tom from Lansing on line one. How you doing, Tom?
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, my man. I'm well.
Good. I wanted to ask some questions, make some comments on a couple of items that you had mentioned. One is the Michigan State women's basketball team. I've followed the women's basketball team for a number of years. And over the last few years, it seems like Susie had put a lot of effort into bringing in players that had some athleticism and speed at the guard positions. And I thought they were pretty well stacked over the last few years. But in watching the games this year, it's like, what happened to all those people that could dribble and shoot? They've seemed to have been, the players seem to be not the ones we've looked at over the last couple of years, and it's really hurting them when they go against quick athletic teams.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be something you might want to pass on to your guest when he gets there.
Yeah.
Did a bunch of people just leave or get hurt or what? The second comment I have has to do with college football. I saw something in the paper today that mentioned that Urban Meyer took the Michigan State defense and the Oregon offense and put it together and came out with a winner, and that looks like exactly what he did. So my question to you is, even when we watched the Michigan State-Ohio State game, Ohio State hit a lot of passes that Oregon hit on Michigan State, and their defense was almost identical to Michigan State's, except they had a lot more talented people, I thought, in the positions. You know, at what point does you make adjustments to catch up with the fact that you got a great system, everybody's copying it, they know your strengths, your weaknesses, and they start using it against you? At what point does a team have to reassess?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I tell you what, Tom, I think that is a very interesting perspective on Ohio State's win last night. Because I tell you what, that defense that you saw from Ohio State was truly the X factor in that game. I mean, they found out a great formula as to how to at least put a bump in the road when it comes to the number 3 ranked quarterback in the nation and the Heisman Trophy winner in Marcus Mariota. I think he's the best quarterback in the nation. But, you know, it was unbelievable to see, especially, though, and I will say this as well, because Oregon didn't do itself a lot of favors in that game either, especially early on. If you remember, Ducks receivers dropped 3 passes all on third down throughout that entire game. So the Ducks certainly didn't do themselves any favors throughout that game. But Ohio State, you know, hey, you got to give them a lot of credit because they came up with a few red zone stands, especially that one in the second quarter that really kind of changed the momentum of the game, that really, really kind of sparked things for them. As far as Michigan State and their struggles against these two teams, again, their only blemishes on their record the entire year, I really think when you look at those two games against Oregon and Ohio State from a Michigan State perspective, Tom, I really think that was just really a lot of blown coverage by that secondary. If you saw in the second half, more so in the Oregon game, you saw a lot of blown assignments by the linebackers and corners that allow big plays down the field. Heck, even a few runs up the middle of the field, and especially in running back Royce Freeman. I mean, he had a field day just because there were blown assignments in that secondary and linebacker core that allowed him to spring loose. And once you give Oregon that kind of space, hey, they can take it to the house on you. OSU didn't allow that to happen. And if you look at JT Barrett, I mean, if you remember, there were a few times where he just burned Michigan State on some big yardage down the field because the corners were a bit confused as to their coverages, something we haven't really seen from Michigan State defense in a few years now. So a very interesting perspective on that angle, Tom.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, no problem. Again, folks, you're going to call in just like Tom just did, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We got another caller right now. Ray is online, too. My man, Ray, how you doing?
How you doing, partner?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
That game was brutal last night. Brutal. I'm telling you, Ohio State played them 10 times. They beat them 10 times. I thought Oregon was better than that. They got pushed all over the field. If it wasn't for 4 turnovers to none, that game would have been a big blowout.
I definitely agree with you, Ray. I mean, when you look at that game last night, for me, one of the glaring things that I looked at even before this game even started was the fact that Oregon, I mean, hey, their defense is they have an average defense. Their defense isn't great. It doesn't really, you know, it doesn't turn your head. I mean, their defense actually, when it comes to a national perspective, Oregon had the 102nd ranked defense in the entire nation when you look at every single facet. They give up an average of 23 points per game, 259 through the air. And, you know, there hasn't been a national champion that has had a defense ranked that low. You have to go all the way back to 2011 when Auburn actually beat Oregon. So it was very interesting. Cardale Jones, I mean, I tell you what, that guy, that kid right there, he has an NFL body already. He was able to torch Oregon in multiple ways on third downs and when it came to, you know, just burning them on the ground with his feet. Unbelievable from that perspective. And how about Ezekiel Elliott? You got to give credit to that Ohio State offensive line as well because they opened up a lot of holes for Elliott to work with. But I tell you what, man, that kid was a man amongst boys last night, Ray.
Urban Meyer, He went on fourth down three times, and they knew it was coming, that running back, that quarterback, and they couldn't stop him. He'd get 2 or 3 yards when it looked like he was going to be stopped for no gain.
He's too big. He's too big, Ray. Yep.
They're talking about putting him in the third round of the NFL draft. He comes out, I'll tell you what, with three quarterbacks over, he might want to go out and get some money.
I thought about that after that game last night. I'm sitting there looking at this kid. Again, he's listed as what, 250, but I tell you what, that boy looks about 260 or something like that, 260, 262, something like that. He has an NFL body already. He's won the three biggest games that you can win. I mean, you knock off a perennial powerhouse in Alabama. Before that, you won the Big Ten championship game. You didn't just win it, but you won it convincingly over Wisconsin. Then you come on the national stage in a national championship and put on a performance like that. I mean, I tell you what, I can name about five or six NFL teams that could use his duties, Ray.
I tell you what, Jim Harbaugh is going to have his work cut out for him. You guys got a couple of your players coming back, and they're saying State's going to be ranked fifth next year, and Ohio State number one.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, if anything, when you look at everything, the Big Ten is on the map, without a doubt, Ray, and it's going to be very entertaining to watch next year.
Yeah, they were only 6-5 overall, but, that was a huge win last night for the Big Ten. That's two national championships for Ohio State in, 12 years now.
Right. No, I agree. I definitely agree, Ray. So, but hey, hats off to Urban Meyer, though, because this is one of the best coaching jobs I've ever seen in college football. I mean, to have your third-string quarterback come in and do what he did. Heck, even going back to when JT Barrett came in, when Braxton Miller was announced that he'd be out for the year, I mean, that is truly remarkable at how this offense just never lost form throughout the entire year.
That guy dying like 3-4 weeks ago after the Michigan game, it seemed like it dedicated those kids to really want to, because that Alabama game, they took like 6 or 7 hits and knocked their helmet off, and they just kept coming back and saying they weren't going to quit. They had no quit in them the last 3-4 weeks.
Yeah, that is certainly true, Ray. Certainly true, without a doubt, man. Impressive stuff. Hats off to Urban Meyer, though.
Yeah, take care, buddy.
Hey, you too. Thanks a lot, Ray. Folks, again, this was a game looking at last night. Now, when you really look at this game, it was interesting in so many angles because, hey, I thought that Ohio State would win, but I didn't think they would win like this. An impressive victory. Again, 42-20 was the final. And again, Ezekiel Elliott, I mean, this kid just came in. Now, don't get me wrong, Cardale Jones, he had a great game. He was 16 of 23 for 242 yards, one touchdown, one interception. He reeled off 38 yards on the ground, 8 of 15 on third down. Even just looking at that, I mean, that's your game right there. The fact that Ohio State was able to sort of bully this great Oregon team was really interesting from many angles. And again, you're looking at Ezekiel Elliott's numbers. I mean, he had 246 yards on 36 carries. That's almost 7 yards per carry. 4 rushing touchdowns last night. Again, you got to give credit to him and that offensive line opening up a lot of holes for Elliott to run through. And I tell you what, this kid is a tough tackle. Without a doubt. I mean, he runs angry. He's a great north-south runner. He's very patient as well. He's patient in reading the defense and picking and choosing his holes. And you are not getting this kid down on that first tackle, period. Point blank, period. Again, he runs angry. I love watching Ezekiel Elliott play. And, it seemed as though it's just interesting to see the transformation from this Ohio State team from week to week to week dating to the beginning of this season. Because at the beginning of the year, I mean, I tell you what, Michigan State, it's looking at that game, the Michigan State-Ohio State game, that is really, to me, when you really start to see some things click for Ohio State, especially Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, a guy who had a broken wrist coming into the year, who really looked unconfident, not confident at all at the beginning of the year, he seemed to really hit his stride at Spartan Stadium. And, Ohio State losing to Virginia Tech, people, when the College Football Playoff Committee decided to throw Ohio State in the top four, there were many that felt as though Ohio State shouldn't be there because of that Virginia Tech loss. And then you can go to the struggles of Penn State, which really was a close game that Ohio State almost lost also. But, this is why I really love that the College Football Playoff Committee, even though I think it does need to be amended as time goes on, it has to be expanded. I definitely believe in that. But you saw a glimpse of what the college football playoff allows in college football. It allows teams who, at the end of the year, you know, seem to be clicking, that many people feel as though they can legitimately compete for a national championship, not based on previous losses at the beginning of the year. It gives those type of teams an opportunity to compete and show their worth in a playoff format. Again, Ohio State was the fourth-ranked team. Florida State, Alabama, Oregon. I mean, those teams have been relatively consistent all season. But you throw in Ohio State, again, a team that struggled and lost to Virginia Tech, you put them in the mix? And now look at it. They are the national champions. The previous BCS system wouldn't have allowed for this. Ohio State wouldn't even have had a shot, let alone a sniff, at a national championship possibility. But again, the college football playoff allows this. And we just saw a peek into what this thing could turn into. And I really enjoyed it. Really, really enjoyed it. So, and as far as the overall perception of the Big Ten now, I mean, heck, you know, our callers just talked about it, you know, how the Big Ten now, I mean, you look at the hire of Jim Harbaugh and the national press that got. He's going to turn around that Michigan program. This is Jim Harbaugh we're talking about. This is a proven guy who knows how to win and knows how to coach. Michigan is going to be fine. Ohio State now just won a national championship, folks. They are the perennial team, best team in college football for this year. The Big Ten has the national championship trophy. And then you look at what Michigan State was able to do against Baylor, a team that, again, many people out there felt as though should have made the college football playoff. They were just on the outside looking in at number 5 in the nation. The Big Ten is on the up and up, and I tell you what, it's going to be on the up and up for quite some time now. I do believe that. We actually have Mike on line 2. Mike from Saginaw, you are on Current Sports. How you doing?
Thank you, L. Martin. How you doing? Do you think Ohio State going to be like in Kentucky in basketball? They going to have all the talent now?
Well, from a recruiting standpoint, this certainly, whenever you win a national championship, this certainly puts a target on your back, and kids want to play for your program. As far as it's to relate that to like a Kentucky, I mean, it's tough because in football, I feel as though there is more disparity when compared to college hoops, because we all know in basketball, all it takes is one or two top recruits, and it could totally change around your program. Basketball, and you allow these players to play on both ends of the floor. Basketball is just a different dynamic. But I tell you what, this certainly is going to be already solid recruiting class for Urban Meyer and company, without a doubt. Now, as far as, you know, them getting back to the national championship and what kind of trickle-down effect can this have as far as Ohio State's consistent success, I think they will be successful. It's so tough in college football to win another national title or to even get close. So as far as that, I think we need to pump the brakes just now and enjoy this win for Ohio State as far as from the Big Ten perspective, because it was certainly impressive, Mike.
Yes, it was. It was impressive. I want to know, since we played against Ohio State and Oregon team, what you think the difference between when Michigan State played Oregon and when y'all played MSU, what's the dynamic between, what if MSU would have beat Oregon and Ohio State? Of course they would have been in the national championship. But I was just thinking, Oregon's football team, is it like a finesse type of team? They have a lot of skill players and everything. They're not like Ohio State. Ohio State probably out physical them and push them all around the field. And I just enjoyed the dynamic between the two. You know, it's good that a school like Oregon can compete for a national championship instead of USC and UCLA out on the coast and everything. What's your take on that?
Yeah, well, I tell you what, Mike. Again, going back to your point that you alluded to about Michigan State playing both of these teams. I think when you look at Oregon is a team that thrives on their speed, agility, and of course, in having an outstanding quarterback in Marcus Mariota, who is fantastic all year. But they really rely on that speed and tangible. A lot of reasons why a lot of teams can't compete with an Oregon is because they can't keep up with them. The way to combat speed is you combat that speed with size. And I think that is exactly what Michigan State was able to do for almost three quarters when they played them. And that's exactly what you saw last night. Ohio State just seemed to be more powerful than Oregon last night. They seemed to be bigger and stronger than Oregon last night. And once you get hit in the mouth, You know, Oregon kind of just seemed like they took a step back, you know, like, oh, man, I didn't know they were this big. You know, that speed can only take you so far. And you saw, I mean, you saw multiple third downs again. Cardale Jones, again, this kid is he's over 6 feet. You know, he's 260 pounds. You know, he went 8 of 15 on third downs. And you saw multiple times on those third downs where they just gave the ball to Cardale Jones at one point and said, hey, big boy, run through him. And he did. So I think if you want to pinpoint a difference when you look at an Oregon compared to a Big Ten team, hey, the Big Ten is a gritty team that is going to try to intimidate you with their size, much like a Michigan State does as well on the gridiron.
Yes, it is. Well, yeah, I'm just going to give you a turn, then I'll let you get to the other callers here. I just want to talk about the Pistons. I mean, you 6-0 on the road, and you're not beating just the bottom tier teams. You're beating teams like Toronto. You're beating San Antonio. You're beating Dallas. I mean, it's just awesome that to watch them beat teams. I just want to know, can one player can really make a difference? Or it's just that they realize that, hey, you know, we got a chance. They finally hit their confidence level. I think is what happened, too, is Jody Meeks came back, What's your take on that? Let's get to other callers. Thanks.
Hey, thanks a lot, Mike, for your call. And you know, I think when you look at it and evaluate it, first off, you got to give credit to Stan Van Gundy. Stan Van, even when this team only had 5 wins out of, they were like 5-23. Stan Van still believed that this team had a lot of talent and can turn things around. And you know, once they got rid of Josh Smith, I don't know. There was sort of like an emergence from this team, especially on the defensive side. It seems as though Detroit right now, even when they were dead, because looking at that game last night, because I was flipping back and forth between the national championship game and the Pistons and Raptors game, I tell you what turned the game around, Mike. It was that, you know, when they got down double digits, it seemed as though they just kind of flipped to a new gear defensively, got a lot of stops, decided to get out and transition. You saw a lot of transition buckets, guys attacking the paint like Brandon Jennings and DJ Augustine. And then, again, you know, the Detroit Pistons are shooting well from the three-point line. Jody Meeks can come in a game and just become hot all of a sudden. You know, he's like the microwave back in the day, Vinny Johnson. I mean, he comes in a game and can hit it anywhere on the court. You saw when the shot clock was running down that crucial possession as the game winded down. It was like 3 seconds on the shot clock. Great defense by Toronto. It kicks over to Jody Meeks. He throws up a three-pointer with 2 seconds left, nails it. Nothing but the bottom of the net. Jody Meeks is instant offense when he enters a game. And when you have guys like that, again, it feeds off on the rest of the team. But don't sleep on Detroit's defense, because I think that is what is keeping this team in games and allowing them to close out games. Heck, the game ended on a steal by Brandon Jennings last night. That says a lot about the mentality of this Detroit Pistons squad.
Yes, it does. And I just can't get over Brandon Jennings. To me, I thought Brandon Jennings was just he had that 55-point game in Milwaukee, and all of a sudden he just you just never heard nothing about him anymore. You never hear him about even the conversation in the top guards in the league or nothing like that. And then all of a sudden, man, Milwaukee just probably said, "Well, we're not going to get any better with him." So they traded him. You know, usually guards like that, they hard to come by. Point guards. Every team needs a guy who can carry up the ball to set up the offense and stuff. But I guess Brandon Jennings is really showing that he really could play.
Yeah.
It's really impressing a lot of people. I mean, all of a sudden, it's just great to see the other team, the people in Detroit and really Oakland County responding to this team. They're just not leaving the palace kind of quiet there.
Right.
So
about
that, man.
No,
Thanks again, man.
Hey, thanks a lot, Mike, for your call. Always appreciate it, man. And yeah, I had a conversation yesterday with a good friend of mine dating back to high school, my friend Robert. He's a diehard Piston fan, just like I am. And, you know, we've been waiting for a moment like this where Detroit has any sense of relevance when it comes to success in the NBA. And, you know, we talked about Brandon Jennings and how, when he is out there doing his thing and is clicking, getting others involved, being aggressive offensively, and taking good shots, not just jacking up crap. He is one of the best point guards in the league and arguably maybe a top 5, top 10 point guard, without a doubt. I definitely see that angle as well. All right, well, let's hit our first break of the show, folks. Again, if you want to call in, just like any of our callers have done today thus far, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. What are your thoughts on Ohio State becoming the first playoff national champion in college football? Give us a ring. We'll talk about that and so much more. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. I have to remind you all that tomorrow, I'll be sitting down with a fantastic guest. His name is Ira Childress, and he is the Okemos High School Athletic Director. Ira has been doing a great job. I believe he's had the job now going on 2 years. And has really done some great things over at Okemos High School. Ira will be sitting down with me to talk about so many things, especially from an athletic director standpoint in high school, and how he deals with things on a daily basis. A lot of people don't know that Ira was also a former television sports broadcaster back in the day. So we'll talk about that career as well. And the challenges when it comes to the recruiting trail for high school athletes today. So you don't want to miss that episode. If you want to be a part of that live studio audience, you can simply go to WKAR.org and sign up online for free. We always have a great time here at the Communication Arts and Sciences Building every Wednesday night. So, all right, folks. Well, I want to invite now, we haven't heard this man's voice all hour, Alex Sharg, our sports engineer, the man behind the glass. How you doing?
Doing well, Al. And yeah, about Ohio State, man. What a statement they made about that program. And I'm seeing some tweets today, some articles written about Urban Meyer propelling himself as one of the top coaches in college football.
He's
and I would argue
ever.
That he already was one of the best in college football.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, now this really kind of cements that legacy for Urban Meyer. I really think that now he is etched himself as one of the best college football coaches ever, without a doubt.
Ever
in the history of the sport. I mean, again, the only coach other than Nick Saban to win, you know, championships with not one but two teams. I mean, you know how hard that is to do? And, you know, he won it with Florida with only a two-year gap. I mean, 2006, I believe, 2008, and now this year with Ohio State. I mean, it is truly remarkable what this man has been able to do. And he's only, 51 years old?
That's true.
He's going to be coaching for a while.
That's true. I mean, two different teams. I don't think anyone really has ever done
Nick
that.
Saban. Nick Saban is the only coach.
Besides Nick Saban.
Right.
But then you can make the argument that, yeah, well, Urban decided to stay a college coach. He could have went pro. Most college coaches could have bounced around, maybe won two championships, but he decided to stay as a college coach.
Well, this is what I mean. I mean, just like I said, going back to my statement, just in college football, you can argue that Urban Meyer is what I think it's already etched that he is one of the best college football coaches ever. College football.
Wow, Al Martin on the record.
Yeah, we're not talking NFL here. We're talking about college football again. And looking at this season, I mean, what coach in the game can change around a program and keep it consistent with a third string quarterback? This wasn't the backup here. I mean, even with JT Barrett. I mean, a lot of people. I went on this show. I'll never forget this show, too. When it was announced that Braxton Miller was going to go out and be out for the rest of the year, and reading the national headlines and reading a few local media members here, a lot of people pronounced Ohio State dead. Didn't even think that they would even come close to winning the Big Ten championship.
We did, too.
Let alone a national championship. I thought Ohio State was done, period. I didn't think they would even sniff the Big Ten title. And then to see that they got past that, they made the playoff. And then, you know, you bring in, the third-string quarterback. That is nothing but coaching. Point blank, period. So, yeah, Urban Meyer, hey, he might have just cracked my top five of all time, man, when it comes to college football.
I think he did. You're on the record with that, man.
Yeah,
he
definitely.
Did. He cracked it.
Definitely.
But, yeah, overall, I mean, with Oregon, the demise of Oregon, it would have been a totally different game in the first quarter if Oregon's wide receivers made those catches. I mean, the turnover margin, yeah, Ohio State played well, but they lost the turnover battle. They almost gave the game to Oregon. So I think that if Oregon made some plays and not making turnover mistakes, but if they made some mental mistakes, if they didn't make those mistakes, it could have been a totally different ballgame. It might have been 21-7 at that point in the game in the first quarter.
No, totally agree. I totally agree with you, because if you look at it, Ducks receivers, they dropped three passes all on third down. Those three passes were very crucial moments in the game. And you got to give Ohio State credit, too, because they took advantage of those moments. And, again, you know, you look at this, you know, again, those big red zone stops that Ohio State had in that game, especially that one in the second quarter was so big, because you kind of felt the momentum sort of shifting and Oregon getting back in the game. And then they corral, and that defensive line comes up very, very big. Hey, I even count those stops in the red zone were also turnovers for me, because Ohio State took advantage of those as well.
Right.
So, hey, when you have a defense that was able, and again, there's been really no formula as to how to stop Marcus Mariota all year. Marcus Mariota has been the best quarterback in college football all year.
It's funny, Al, and Brad Walker, current state, WKR's very own Brad Walker, came in before we got in the air today, and he asked me, he said, Alex, why on earth was Oregon in the red zone running the ball when Marcus Mariota is obviously their go-to weapon and the passing game is what makes them great? Why in the red zone were they running the ball so much? So you could say, oh, maybe they saw something a little bit different. It kind of reminds me, Al, of Michigan State when Jeremy Langford was on a roll. Maybe the passing game was struggling, and then we're wondering why in the world are we passing the ball when the run game was working? And maybe that's what really hurt Oregon, was that I was surprised. It's not like Mariota's throwing three picks and he's mentally a little messed up with his passing game. They were playing well. Mariota was making fine passes. He was hitting receivers in stride. I don't understand why they didn't pass the ball that much. Maybe they saw something in the defense. Ohio State didn't stack the box. But why not pass the ball as much as you have your best weapon on the team?
Yeah, well, you would have liked to seen them in those red zone opportunities.
I'm wondering why they didn't.
Drive back and throw it.
Exactly.
You want them to throw the ball in those opportunities.
It's Mariota's the best player. Obviously, they couldn't get anything going on the ground.
Well, you know what was really interesting, though, is that, you know, and I said all along, I mean, I haven't seen Urban Meyer have this good of a defensive line dating back to those Florida days. I mean, if you remember, I mean, Urban Meyer had one of the best defensive lines in college football dating back to 2008 and 2006. This defensive line kind of resembled that this year. And it's something I pointed out before the game that, you know, hey, this defensive line is going to try and get pressure on Marcus Mariota. And when they did, when you saw Mariota try to get things going, the very few times that he did drive back and try to you know, go down the field in those red zone opportunities, he was being flushed to the outside. Now, normally, Marcus Mariota has been very good at making plays on the run and finding receivers down the field. But in such a confined territory like the red zone, it made Ohio State, and it took out the factor of speed, because speed doesn't matter when you only got 10 yards to deal with. You know what I mean? All you need is to play within your zone and to lock down your zone. Ohio State did that perfect, and they were very gritty, man. They pushed Ohio State around, and hey, Ohio State didn't punch back. So very interesting, though. But I tell you what, this does not take away at all. This loss doesn't take away the type of season and type of year and type of player off the field that Marcus Mariota is. Marcus Mariota will be, if he decides to come out, one of the top draft picks in this year's upcoming draft. Even though I do think this game may have hurt him because he got exposed a little bit in this game, but he will be a first rounder. The bigger question for me on the other end for Ohio State is just who exactly is going to be their starting quarterback next year. Who will it be? I mean, because you got Cardale Jones, who certainly has the size and has performed and knows how to perform on the game's biggest stage. You got JT Barrett, who probably has the best intangibles out of all three. And then you got Braxton Miller, a guy with raw talent. Question number one is, will all three come back? And question number two is, if they do, who will be the guy? That's a question to ponder. All right, folks, so let's hit our second break. When we come back, we'll be chatting with an outstanding friend of Current Sports who, again, does one outstanding job for the Lansing State Journal. It's Lansing State Journal lead prep sports reporter and also covers the MSU women's basketball team and so much more, Brian Calloway. Brian joins me on the air in the blink of an eye. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. You know, one of the questions that I pondered also going into and watching that Oregon and Ohio State game was whether or not Michigan fans, I should say, Michigan fans were going to root for Ohio State. And, you know, I got to just to read one of the tweets I got last night. Of course, Doc Love, he is the prep commentator for Big Country 92.1 FM. He tweeted me yesterday and said, even though Coach Jim Harbaugh is rooting for Ohio, the rest of us just can't. Hashtag go Ducks. So that kind of gives you a glimpse into the mentality of just at least one Michigan fan there. So I'm curious if those if again, fans of Michigan were rooting for Ohio State for what that win could do for, again, the Big Ten's perspective. That's a very interesting take right there. All right, well, let's get to our guest for today's show. He certainly is a friend of Current Sports. He is the Lansing State Journal lead prep sports reporter and also covers the MSU women's basketball team and so much more. Brian Callaway, how you doing, Brian?
Hey, not bad, Al. How you doing?
Fantastic, my man. Happy Tuesday. Happy Tuesday, brother. Now, I want to dive into first. Again, we talked about the breaking news that was, again, released about 5 minutes before we took the air at approximately 12:54 p.m. to be exact. Michigan State University women's basketball player Jasmine Lumpkin, she has elected to leave the program effective immediately, citing personal reasons. Now, again, she played in 15 games this year, started 14 times, averaged a little over 5 points and 4.2 rebounds per game. Brian, first off, how shocking was that for you to hear this news?
Oh, it was very shocking. It wasn't like Jasmine wasn't playing for them, and pretty much with them being so shorthanded, they kind of needed all hands on deck, everyone healthy to kind of help them out. So this is just a huge blow for them, and, I mean, this makes them even thinner than they already were. So it just kind of adds to what's kind of been a challenging start to the Big Ten play for Susie Merchant.
Yes, certainly. And you know what? Again, Susie and company, I mean, they're still searching for win number one in the Big Ten Conference. I got to ask you, Brian, I mean, looking at this, because this is sort of a weird season for a lot of people in this area, especially for me, because this is the first time I've seen this team struggle this much throughout a season. I got to ask you, where does the problem stem, and how is Susie handling the start to this pretty rocky conference play?
Well, I mean, I kind of agree with you. I mean, if you kind of look back when you saw this team at the very beginning of the season, you see them go toe-to-toe with Notre Dame on their home court and, you know, just come, you know, very close to knocking them off. I mean, this start to Big Ten play for them is very shocking. And essentially, I mean, this is kind of the same cast of players that last month beat Syracuse on a neutral site down in Florida as well, too. But, I mean, when you kind of look at this team right now, the depth is obviously a big issue. And, you know, Jasmine Hines is a senior that's experienced and a player that could probably help them. You know, she's missed, you know, pretty much the past month just kind of dealing with symptoms of concussions. Another problem, they don't really have a true point guard, and that was something that Susie kind of brought up after the loss to Northwestern on Sunday, and that's something that's kind of hurt them at times, too. I mean, twice in this losing streak, there was games where they only had 6 assists. And then, you know, earlier this month against Michigan, they had a game of 6 assists and 24 turnovers. And, I mean, you're not going to win many games like that no matter who you're playing. So, and those are kind of things that have, you know, kind of gone into the struggles that they've had to start Big Ten play. And, I mean, and, you know, three of these games in Big Ten play, I mean, they've fallen behind by 20 points and then had to battle back. And right now, I mean, just kind of the way they are assembled, I mean, they're not a good enough team to spot teams 20 points and then, you know, try to come back, especially in the second half of a game. So, I mean, there's just a numerous things that are kind of going wrong for this team, you know, all at the same time. And I mean, it also didn't help, too, the first game for Big Ten season. You know, three of the players had flu symptoms. Ariel Powers, their star, Tori Jankowska, and Lexi Gutter were all impacted by the flu. So, I mean, Big Ten play didn't even get off to a good start for them. With that happening as well, too. So, it's, like you said, it's kind of been a very, very weird season for them, where a lot of different things have gone on. And, I mean, and this, you know, Jasmine Lumpkin leaving is just kind of the latest thing in what's kind of been a trying season so far.
Now, Brian, I got to ask this because I think it's a legitimate question at this point in the year. I mean, it seems as though every time, you know, I'm watching an MSU women's basketball game, I mean, you can pretty much guarantee that Ariel Powers is going to bring it. I mean, she has been absolutely brilliant this entire year. She can create her own shots. She's so athletic. And then on the other end, I mean, hey, even Tori Jankowska, I mean, she's another player that can come in and give you instant offense. But, you know, when I look at those two and I look at the disparity with their numbers compared to the rest of the team, I got to ask, Brian, is Powers and or Jankowska doing a little too much for this squad?
I think they are kind of relying on them to do a little bit too much. I mean, obviously, with the when you have a player like Ariel, they can do a lot of things. I think, you know, oftentimes, you know, sometimes teammates kind of automatically look to them and expect them to do those things. And I mean, if you kind of looked at this team earlier in the season, I mean, it was kind of definitely the Torrey and Ariel show, and they were doing things, and kind of teammates were looking around and waiting for them to do things. It was to the point where there was a time earlier in the season when Coach Merchant was making Torrey and Ariel sit out of sets in practice and making other people on the court score for them. So I thought then they had kind of, you know, figured those things out, you know, during the early portion of the season. But now, obviously, I mean, they pretty much need both of those players to bring it every night, or they're not going to be in games. I mean, you look at, you know, the other day last week against Nebraska, when Ariel Power scored 35 points, which is the second most in program history in a game, and it still wasn't enough for them to win that game when they had a 6-point lead with 3 minutes to go in that game. So, I mean, they pretty much need them to kind of bring it every night and kind of deliver these performances, because I don't think there's that much consistency with the players behind them.
And, you know, Brian, to start the show, one of our callers, Tom, had a question for you that I also am very curious to hear your response upon. Again, you talked about how Susie Merchant, especially in that last loss, she cited the lack of a point guard for this team. Just how concerning is that? And if possible, if this thing is going to turn around, who do you see transforming into that facilitator for this squad?
Well, right now, I mean, obviously they started the season, you know, trying to use Anna Morrissey kind of in that role. And, you know, the turnovers kind of became an issue, especially against Michigan. And that kind of led to a little bit of changes with the starting lineup going into last week's game against Nebraska. So I pretty much expect, you know, Torrey Jankowska. I mean, she's probably going to have the ball in her hands more often than not. And, I mean, that's kind of unfortunate for them, because they could really use her playing off the ball and scoring. And I think her, you know, with the ball in her hands more so now, is going to kind of maybe limit her scoring. And plus, you know, both Ariel and Torrey are already playing pretty much 40 minutes just because of their lack of depth too. So, I mean, it's pretty much right now it's going to have to be Torrey and maybe small Lexi Guthert in there, and, you know, trying to get Anna Morrissey in there for spots when they can to handle the ball. But, I mean, teams already know what this MSU team's, their limitations, and they're going to, you know, they're pressuring them. I mean, Michigan just pressured them as much as they possibly could and was able to force those turnovers, and that's what a lot of teams are doing to them just because they know their situation.
Brian Callaway of the Lansing State Journal. Now, Brian, you know, now I got to ask you this. Is this team on the bubble, and what is it going to take from this point on for them to make the tourney?
Well, I mean, they have to start beginning the upward climb up the Big Ten. I mean, that's pretty much what it comes down to. They're 8-8 right now, so, I mean, they're in serious jeopardy. But the good thing for them is that they have some opportunities coming up to get some big wins. I mean, Iowa, nationally ranked team, comes in here on Sunday. No, they have games against Maryland and Rutgers when they come into town. So, I mean, they have some opportunities with the Big Ten being as good as it is. I mean, with Maryland and Rutgers in the fold, I mean, that kind of creates, you know, more opportunities to get some big wins. So if they can, you know, start to get it rolling in the right direction, starting on Thursday against Illinois, and then, you know, maybe picking up a big win over Iowa at home and knocking off a team like Maryland or knocking off a team like Minnesota or some of these ranked teams in the Big Ten, if they can start doing those kind of things, I mean, that can help them kind of, you know, continue the streak of postseason experiences they've had under Susie Merchant. But, you know, kind of right now, where they're at is kind of uncharted territory for them under Merchant. I mean, they've haven't started a season like this 0-5 in Big Ten. I mean, I think the last time that happened was in 2002. So it's been a while since, you know, they've kind of had a struggle to start off the Big Ten schedule.
And in talking with the players on this squad, Brian, after these losses, I mean, what seems to be the team morale? From a morale standpoint and from a mental standpoint, I mean, are they at a healthy standpoint from that perspective?
I mean, I just think it's just frustration. I mean, you look at a player like Torrey Jankowska and Ariel Powers, I mean, they're not used to losing. I mean, this is, you know, starting to take a little bit of a toll. I mean, Ariel Powers went to Detroit Country Day, where they did not lose too much at Detroit Country Day.
Right.
I mean, this is kind of new to them. I mean, it's almost like this is something that was far from expected to happen to them this season. And I mean, I just think they're all kind of searching for answers and searching for ways to get over the hump. And I mean, they came so close last week against Nebraska, and only to lose a 6-point lead in the final minutes. And I mean, it seems like it's one way after another that they're losing some of these games, and it just, I mean, it's just something that they're not used to, and they're just trying to find a way to kind of get things righted and get going in the right direction.
Certainly. All right, folks. Again, this Thursday, they will take on Illinois to try and start blooming that rose from the concrete. We'll see if they can turn it around. All right, Brian, now, before I let you go, I want to talk about prep sports. Now, of course, you are the lead prep sports writer at the Lansing State Journal. First off, I mean, how are you enjoying covering all of these games, man, in high school sports? How is that for you?
Well, not too bad. You know, kind of getting used to getting out there and getting out to a lot of these local communities and kind of seeing, you know, who some of the top basketball players are here in the Lansing area. So it's been a fun adjustment for me.
Yeah, certainly. Now, on the basketball team, I got to ask you, I mean, what teams have been impressive to you in both boys and girls hoops? And who do you think can make a strong run to possibly a state championship?
Well, obviously, when you kind of look at girls hoops and the Lansing area, you got to kind of start with Hazlett and DeWitt. I mean, those are two strong programs, and obviously they met on Friday with both of them being ranked number one in the state in their respective classes, Hazlett in Class B, DeWitt in Class A, and Hazlett was able to win that game. But Hazlett just, you know, suffered a big loss to their team with McKenna Ott, who is one of the best players in this Lansing area. She has stress fractures and will miss almost a month at the least for them, and that could be something that could hurt them. When you kind of look at the boys' side, you got to kind of look at Everett or Trevor Manuel, the Oregon commit, who I know that you had on your TV show as well,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
And, yeah. He's got Everett off to a good start, and they're receiving, they're just outside the top 10 in the Class A rankings. And they've got a big game coming up this Friday with Grand Ledge, which is unbeaten and, you know, has Josh Horford, the younger brother of Allen, John Horford. And they've got a few other pieces, too. And I think that, you know, they might be the best collective team in the Lansing area. But, you know, and then Trevor Manuel might be the best, you know, individual talent in the area. But there's also, you kind of look at Hazlett with Brandon Allen, a point guard that's kind of getting looked. I mean, they're an intriguing team in Class B to watch out for. Williamston, the kid with, like, Riley Lewis, they're also an intriguing team. So there's several intriguing teams in the area to kind of be on the lookout for, both the boys and girls sides for basketball.
Now, Brian, it feels as though it's like negative 20 outside right now. But for those listening and, you know, for those that want to get out, brave the cold, and enjoy some Tuesday night hoops, what are the games to watch tonight, and where will you be at tonight?
The games to watch for sure, on the girls' side, there is Hazlett-Williamston. It's a matchup of two teams in Class B that are both ranked in the top 10. Williamston girls are ranked number 10 in Class B, and Hazlett girls are ranked number 1 in Class B. So, and that game is at Hazlett, so that will be one of the games to watch. Myself, I'll be at Hazlett at Williamson Boys, which is a kind of a matchup of two of the top scoring guards in the area, in Brandon Allen and Riley Lewis. So that should be a fun game as well, too. And we also have someone out at St. John's Portland, which would be a decent game for on the boys' side as well today. So, yeah, there's quite a few good games going on in the area this tonight.
All right, folks, we'll get your popcorn ready. All right, Brian, also, I saw that you did a great write-up on Al Slammer, a man who also has been on the show numerous times here on Current Sports, long-time Holt High School football coach. He's been there, you know, he's been involved with high school sports now for 37 years. What do you think, what led to Al Slammer retiring, Brian?
Well, Al, when I talked to him yesterday, he said the main things were his health. It also, I mean, he's had a few heart issues in the past. And then there's also a chance to coach the college level. He's going to be joining Craig Rundle staff at Albion, working with the secondary and safeties. And that's something that, you know, he kind of found his niche as a high school coach, but he felt like, you know, this opportunity necessarily wasn't going to come up for him again. And it was kind of unexpected that he had a chance to, go to the next level in coaching college. And so he had to take up the opportunity, and And when you kind of look at him, he's a little bit familiar with the Albion school, considering he's had one of his sons play at Albion as well, too, in the football program. So he's familiar with Albion, and it kind of was a natural fit for him to join that staff. So I think those are the main things that kind of went into his decision to retire from Holt and take on his next challenge and working with the Albion College football program.
Now, you know, any high school coach, I find it so interesting, any high school coach that decides to possibly try, you know, their hand at the, you know, a higher rank, whether it be college, whether it be, you know, the pros, or wherever it may be. I mean, what do you think as far as when it comes to the transcendence of success to another level from high school to wherever it may be? I mean, what criteria alludes to success, and what do you think, what kind of job will Al Slammer do?
Well, I think he'll do a good job. I mean, I think it helps when you make that transition and you start off as kind of a position coach. So it kind of allows you to kind of get a feel for things at the college level and, you know, some of the things that go into it that are different from high school. But, I mean, obviously when you kind of look at it, it's a big difference. I mean, high school, you're kind of, when you're the coach, I mean, it's kind of entrenched and you're all in your community and you're not, you know, doing the recruiting stuff and going out and trying to find players like you have to do at a college level as you kind of continually, you know, try to find pieces to make your program work. And, you know, when you kind of look at high school, you're trying to mold the talent that's in your school district and trying to put together the best team that's together. So, I mean, there's several differences when it comes to it. But I think for, you know, Al, when he's going to a place like Albion that he's familiar with, that number one helps. Number two, I mean, he's worked this high school football in the state for 37 years. So that will help him as he, you know, starts to help this Albion program recruit, just because of the relationships he's probably built within his 37 years of coaching. I mean, that thing will help as well, too. So I think the transition will go smoothly for him.
Yeah, certainly wishing him well, a dear friend of the show as well. All right, well, there you have it. Brian Callaway, Lansing State Journal Lee Prep Sports reporter, who also covers the Amateur Women's Basketball team and so much more. Hey, Brian, you be easy, my man, and thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Gotta love Brian, man. One of my favorite reporters in the area, I tell you. All right, folks. Well, man, time flies when you're having fun. Only 3 minutes left in the show. Fantastic show. I want to thank all of the callers who called in today. Again, a shout-out to Brian Callaway of the Lansing State Journal. I will be myself out at a few high school basketball games tonight, so I'll be revving up for that. Also, I want to remind you all that I'll be sitting down with Ira Childress. He is the Okemos High School Athletic Director. He'll be joining me on tomorrow night's TV taping of Current Sports TV. Again, if you want to come out and enjoy that episode, simply go to WKAR.org. Sign up online for free. We also have an announcement that on later on this month, on January 28th, that Wednesday night for Current Sports TV, I'm excited because I'll be sitting down with Keon Gee. Keon Gee, he's a fantastic young man who is actually, he just won the 2015 Silver Gold Gloves Championship. Yes, folks, he is one outstanding kid, and he's pretty good at the sport, to say the least. So I'll be sitting down, him and his trainer, Ali Easley, will be in the house for that taping as well. And we just got word that we will have Susie Merchant. Yes, Susie Merchant will finally be gracing the stage of Current Sports TV out in February. We're looking for possibly a February 4th date. So mark all of those dates on your calendar. You want to be in the house when we have those individuals in the house, all right? Well, folks, again, we are sadly out of time, but you want to join us tomorrow. Tomorrow, I'll have Brooks Lambeer, Impact sports writer. He'll be talking about the soccer scene and a few Spartans that could possibly get drafted into the MLS. How about that? You don't want to miss that show. Thanks so much to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports. You have been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care, have a fantastic Tuesday, and be easy, people.